You know those friends you have in life that allow you to be your true self, where you can be goofy and stupid and dark and light and all those things that make us human? Well, there is such a person in the room this morning. His name is Jason, and he is here from Los Angeles. He's sitting in the back there, and if you have a chance to meet Jason, you can meet him. Don't ask him any questions about me, because he'll... You probably won't want to come to this church any longer. But Jason and I have we've had a really good friendship over the last several years, and he's provided a real place, a safe place for me to be myself and a true, genuine friend. And he came up on Friday night, and we went mountain biking yesterday. And so I kept thinking as we were mountain biking, I'm thinking, if this church gig doesn't work out, professional mountain biking might be in my future. Not really. We're terrible at it, but we think we're so awesome. But we had a really good time together, so I'm glad to have my friend here, and it's been a real joy for me. Friends are a gift, aren't they? When you can find, I have about a handful of them is all I have, just a couple, and they are my cherished treasures, and I'm so thankful for their lives and what they mean to me. So I'm thankful. I'm full of thanksgiving that my buddy is here. Jason, it's good to have you. If you have your sheets this morning, I want you to pull these out, Waking Up to the Breath of God. These are designed for growth groups, questions for us to dialogue on the sermon during the week as we gather together. If you're not part of a growth group, that's fine. These are also for you just to use if you find them useful. That's great. And this particular one this morning, I have a series of questions. Some of them are rhetorical questions. And, you know, sometimes a rhetorical question is a good question. It's inviting. It causes us to think and reflect on the passage that we're looking at. It just causes us to think maybe even throughout our week. So there's a series of questions on here that I would invite you to think about this week, especially as we're moving towards Resurrection Sunday. And we're thinking about the things that we're learning to let go of, things that are not life-giving, things that are things that we're just like, I need to let go of this part of my story or this part of my life, and this isn't working for me anymore, and I want something that's life-giving. So Resurrection Sunday is a big deal in the church, and what we're moving towards is more of that, more resurrection, more of the future, and more of what God's bringing into our present reality. So we're going to be walking through some of this morning, so have that in front of you. And then I want you to open up your Bible to the book of Exodus. It's the second book in the Old Testament, and it's Exodus chapter 3. And it's important for us to have the text in front of us. As we walk through this together, there's some really rich stuff going on in Exodus chapter 3. God is revealing himself to this man, Moses, who is being introduced to this God, who becomes this God of Israel. And there's all these different facets and ways in which God introduces himself to Moses. And next week, we're going to continue on in chapter 3. So this is really rich stuff. We're just going to look at 6 verses this morning. I think on your sheet, it says we're going to look at the first 15 verses. I don't want to get too complicated with that. And just last week, we looked at the first 6. And this week, we're going to continue to look at the first 6 because there's a lot going on in the first 6 verses. Okay? Are you guys with me? Good. All right. Let's read Exodus chapter 3 and verses 1 through 6. And if you would stand with me as we read together, I would appreciate that. And this is what it says. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called out to him of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place in which you are standing is holy ground." He said, "Further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. This is the word of the Lord, and you may be seated. Now, I want to do a bit of a recap, because how many of you were not here last week? You said it's quite a few of you. So I want to do a bit of a recap. So if you were here last week, we're just going to revisit some things. Is that okay? I don't mean to insult your intelligence, but there are other people in the room if you haven't noticed. So let's just do a bit of a recap from last week. We talked about the tendency of the story is to focus on the burning bush. That becomes the miracle in the story. There's this bush that's on fire. Now, last week we talked about how fires probably weren't an uncommon sight in deserts. In a dry land, fires would not have been all that uncommon, probably something that was rather common. So Moses is walking this path, and he turns aside to see that this bush was on fire, but it was not consumed, and that was strange to him. That may be a miracle, but the miracle that we talked about last week that I think is actually more of a miracle exists in verse 3. So if you look at your text there in Exodus chapter 3, verse 3, it says Moses turned aside to see. He turned aside to see, and that is the miracle. The fact that Moses stopped long enough to notice something different in this world that he exists in. So this is a path that Moses had probably walked many times, hundreds of times, and we presented a theory that maybe that bush had always been on fire, but in this moment, Moses stopped long enough to actually pay attention. He turned aside to see. And then verse 4 says that God saw that he saw, and then God spoke. Now that's also interesting that God is now seeing that Moses is seeing. So the two are actually seeing. So there's something really mysterious and wonderful going on in this beautiful connection between the human and the holy right here on this earth. So Moses is waking up to a reality that there is in this world, there's another world that exists. And in this world that God is coming into, and he wants to connect and he wants to speak and he wants to communicate with Moses. So something very, very holy is happening here. So even within the mundane, even within the daily, there exists the divine. There exists this miraculous event that God is moving and speaking with humanity. Now, from my observation, and you can disagree with me, that's okay, but from my observation, I get the impression that people are moving through life way too fast. We're moving through life way too fast to really notice what's going on around us. Rather quickly, at a rapid pace. And the question that I've asked myself and I ask you this morning is, are we stopping long enough to actually pay attention to what is going on around us? To see that within this world, there exists another world in which God longs to connect with us and to speak to us. And we said last week that God has given us his undivided attention. We already have God's undivided attention. You can't earn it. You can't impress him. You can't make him pay attention. He's already paying attention to you. He's there wanting to connect, longing to communicate with us, and longing to bring newness and freshness into our weary bones. The breath of God is what we see in this text. And in Exodus chapter 3, God reveals his name to Moses. He begins to tell Moses who he is. And last week we determined that there is a four-letter word that God uses to describe himself. Now, in our English translations, those four letters are capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, which spells Lord, right? So that will appear in your Bible over 6,000 different times. That word Lord appears. This is the English translation for God, the Lord, the one who heals, the one who saves. And in Hebrew, we use these four letters from right to left, because when you read Hebrew, you read it from right to left. And there was these four letters that God gave to Moses. First was a yod, and then a he, right? And then a vav, and then a he. And this is how God revealed himself to Moses. That is the name of God. So when God gives Moses his name, this isn't just a way of identifying him. This is my name. This is how you can introduce me to others. But when God gives him his name, he says, this is my character. This is my nature. This is who I am. This is what I embody. Now in English, we take these words and we said that it breaks down to YHVH. And I asked you the question last week, how do you pronounce YHVH without any vowels? Because in ancient Hebrew, there are no vowels. So how do you pronounce that? Those of you who were here last week, what did we say? Yes, that sounds weird, doesn't it? For those of you who are not here, what are these people, what are they doing? They're weird. These Christians are strange. So YHVH is kind of basically unpronounceable. You can't pronounce it. So when God introduces himself to humanity, he gives us a name that we can't pronounce, which is like, awesome. Okay, who are you, and how do I tell other people about who you are? perfect. That's going to make me really popular with people. So Moses gets the name of God, the divine breath. It's just simply breath, Y-H-V-H. Now, we say Yahweh or Yahweh to describe this word, L-O-R-D, Lord. So, but in the Hebrew, it's very sacred. It's just breath. Now, I got to thinking a lot about breath this week, and I pay a great deal of attention to my breath, whether I need a breath mint or whether I need gum, but I pay attention to my breathing quite a bit. And one of the things that I love to do is I love to run. In fact, my buddy Jason and I back there, we used to run together in Los Angeles. And one of the things that I love doing in running, and one of the reasons why I like to run, is I like to fight the sloth that exists in me. There is a sloth in me that would much rather sit and eat and consume and just watch television and just not really do anything, because that just feels really good sometimes. So I run to kind of counter that and attack Sloth John and let Sloth John know that he doesn't really rule the roost. So that's one of the reasons why I enjoy running. But when I'm running, my brain, man, I don't know about you, but my brain wants to take over my body. And it wants to convince me that running is really stupid. Like, why are you doing this? This is bad for your knees. It's not working for you. And so I have this inner battle that goes on all the time when I'm running. And it exists for about the first mile and a quarter. I'm having this inner dialogue. Like, you know what, maybe today, because typically I'll run 45 minutes, and in about 45 minutes, I'll get somewhere around 4 or 5 miles. That's about the best that I can do in that time. But after 45 minutes, I'm like, I'm done. I'm tired, I'm exhausted, everything is kind of like, okay, that's enough, I got to stop. But in that first mile, what I tell myself is today, maybe 20 minutes, right? I always try to look for an easy way out, maybe 20 minutes today, or you know what, the weather isn't really great that day, so maybe just 15 minutes, and then that'll be enough for me, and then I can go back to Subway and get a sandwich, and everything will be okay. So as I'm running, I have a shortness of breath that starts. Everything is kind of a shortness of breath, and I'm trying to get my body to fire on all cylinders. And about a mile and a quarter in, everything starts to settle down, and the endorphins start to be released in my body. Now, endorphins are a wonderful gift from God, aren't they? Because they make us really happy. Like, endorphins are great. These things are awesome, and I want them to be firing all the time. So the endorphins start to release. My body starts to quiet down. My brain is no longer in charge of me. I'm starting to tune into my breath. I'm starting to listen to my breath. And I started thinking about my breath from a spiritual perspective. As I'm running, I'm listening to my breath. It's starting to slow down. Now, I kid you not, and I'm not sharing this story with you because this is what pastors do. We like to make things more dramatic and make the story more exciting. This actually happened, okay? This is a real thing. I'm running. And as I'm running and I'm listening to my breath and I'm taking it in and I'm thinking about Yahweh and I'm thinking about the breath of God and my breath syncing up with one another, and it's just like, this is amazing. The green hills, I love the green hills right now. How everything is green and vibrant and everything felt like it was breathing, it was alive, and I'm getting in sync with all of God's creation and my breath and running, and I'm like, I'm thankful that I can run and I have the ability to run. At about a mile and a half to 2 miles, I start weeping. Right? I'm weeping. I'm like, what is going on with me? I'm an absolute mess. And I stop. I stopped running, and I became very aware of where my feet were planted in that moment. Then this passage in Exodus chapter 3, verses 5 through 6 just came rushing into my heart. Do not come any closer. God said, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And I thought, the place where you are running is holy ground. I'd run this path before. I'd run it many times before. The place wasn't special, didn't change, wasn't any different than it was the last time. But for some reason, I became very aware of something sacred and divine in that moment, and I couldn't put words to my experience. I couldn't describe it. It was overwhelming me to the point where it's like my breath and God's breath were syncing up. Now, I know that sounds really mystical and weird, but come on, Yahweh, really? Breath? How do you describe this? How do you even begin to pronounce it? How do you begin to describe God to the world? We love to take this and we love to put it into a category and say God is this and God isn't this and God is like this and he's not like this. And we put it into these categories and make it really easy and digestible. But I start, because I think where you start determines where you end up. And I start with this mystical God, like, I don't even know sometimes. I don't even know how to pronounce it. And yet something really sacred. I was full of gratefulness for my health, for my life, for my breath, for my family, for love. It just all came flooding into my soul in that moment. And all I was doing was running. I wasn't running from something. I wasn't even running to something. I was just running. And in that moment, I felt God's very presence, and the ground in which I was standing felt very sacred and holy. Now, let me ask you a question, because I think this raises lots of questions. And I just want you to be thinking about these questions this week. Have you ever thought about the name of God? Just the name. And have you ever thought about God's name being anything different than just a name? A friend of mine asked me these questions long ago. Have you ever thought about God's name being something different than just a name? You think about that. You see, in many traditions, God's name isn't even pronounced out loud because it's so sacred and it's so mystical and it's so holy and it's so reverent that to even say his name strips it of its power and its beauty and its mystery. So we don't even say it. We don't even utter it. It's the name of God. If the name of God is the sound of breathing, how does that change the way that you view yourself as a living being? How does it change the way you look at your life and the world in which you live? How does it change the way that you view others? As I was tuning into my breath and tuning into the reality that God is breath, something wonderful was happening in that moment. Exodus 3, verses 5 through 6. Again, do not come any closer, God says to Moses, for the ground that you are standing on is holy ground. Now, I thought about Moses. Moses had been walking this path for 40 years, the same path, same dirt, same mundane path, same existence. And all of a sudden, Moses became aware that the ground in which he was standing on is now holy. Raises more questions. Did the ground all of a sudden change? Did the ground become holy in that moment, or had the ground always been holy? And what does it mean to be standing on holy ground? What does that even mean when you think about it and you reflect upon it? Or how about this? Are we always standing on holy ground? Is Buchanan Road holy, or is it irritating? Is Railroad holy? Well, between 3 and 5, it's not. But there are certain times when you're walking along or you're driving along and you're just caught up in the moment and you're like, there's something going on here. Can Buchanan Road, Railroad Road, Harbor, can even Willow Pass Road, really? Can all of these roads become? Can we become aware that the road, the places where we're traveling, these are sacred, holy places? Are we standing on holy ground all the time? And what do you believe it means? What does it even mean to say we're standing on holy ground? Does that change your perspective at all? Does it challenge the way in which you see yourself and which you see the world? It should, if you really think about what's going on here. When I stop long enough to actually pay attention, I turn aside to see Christ in the common. I see the divine in the daily. I see the holy in the hectic. Because let's face it, that's most of life. It's hectic. It's mundane. It's pretty boring. But when we open up and we begin to see Christ in the common, Christ in the mundane, we see God moving in all of the hecticness of life, what I might connect with might be life-changing. There is a world of miracles all around us. I took a walk on Wednesday, and the church offices are over on Leland, 184 Leland Road, Suite A, office of Peter and John and Cindy. Okay? There you go. And I took a walk from the office, and I was going over to one of my favorite restaurants here in Pittsburgh. Not only is Las Panchitas the place where I believe the very Spirit of God dwells and lives, but I now understand that Blue Saigon is another place where God shows up very often in the form of food. It's a wonderful, sacred experience. But as you will quickly discover with myself, food is a very sacred experience, especially good food. And if you add bacon to it, just forget about it, right? Now, the Jews have a saying that every table is an altar. And I love that. Every table is an altar. It's an opportunity for us to connect with God and with one another. Now, if you want to know what food in heaven might taste like, go to Blue Saigon. Unbelievable. Now, on my way back, after I had a warrior dog, which I actually took a picture of it, and I kept showing my friends this thing that I ate. I'm like, look at this thing that I ate. Sometimes you shouldn't say things that are in your brain, John. On the way back, I'm walking down Leland back to my office, and I come to this restaurant, which is next to the office. It's a pho restaurant. Did I get that right? Pho. Some say pho. Some say pho, which is like, don't go any further with that. And some say fee, fo, fi, fum. I don't know. So whatever it is, I know it's a bowl of goodness. And I'm looking in the window. Now, oh, there's this construction going on. Many of you have seen this site. It's the fo, fee, fi, fo, fum, fat restaurant. Yeah, whatever. All those things. And it's been under construction for a long time, and they haven't opened it. So there's these orange cones that are kind of blocking it off. And anytime there's orange cones, don't you just want to go past them? You're like, orange cones, forget about it. I want to pass these things. So I pass the orange cones like you're not supposed to. And I'm looking in the window. I'm like peeking in because I want to know what's going on in our neighborhood. And as I'm peeking in, the contractor comes out. Is there something I can help you with? And I'm thinking, oh man, I'm in trouble. This is fun. This is interesting. He comes out. His name is Gene. And I introduce myself to Gene. We start having a discussion. Quickly, the conversation turns into something sacred. I'm paying attention. We're talking about his ex-wife. We're talking about his broken marriage. We're talking about his kids. We're talking about very real things going on in that moment. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, should I take my shoes off? Because this, I'm aware again of where my feet are planted. There's something going on here. And we're having this great discussion. Then the owner comes out, a Vietnamese man named Johnny. I'm like, perfect. Of course his name's Johnny. So he comes out. I can barely understand them, but we're trying to have this dialogue going on in this moment. They then both invite me into the restaurant. Now, it's stuff hanging from the ceiling, and I'm like, okay, I'll go in. Yeah, I'd love to go in. So we go in. They take me back to the kitchen. They're showing me the ways, and they're very excited about this thing opening. So apparently it's going to be opening soon, which I'm like, okay, Edgewater, when it opens, let's bombard this place. Let's go, right? Because I want to get a free meal out of the deal. So... totally selfish. But we have this great discussion. We go in, we start talking about pho, pho, whatever. We start talking about the food and the kitchen and all the ways in which we can be a blessing to the community. And then on the way out, Gene and I are having this discussion. And Gene asks me, he says, hey, John, before you go, can I ask a favor of you? I said, absolutely. What do you need? He says, could we sit down next week and just connect and talk? I'm like, absolutely. I would love that. Because I have so many questions. I'm like, me too. I have lots of questions. But what happened? Did the ground all of a sudden become holy? Or was God always there? And we just became aware of something really beautiful going on. Because all of life is about connection to me. It's just all about connection. Wherever I go, I just want to connect. I just want to connect with people. I want to connect with nature. I want to connect with what's going on around me. And he said, would it be okay, too, if I told my ex-wife about you? And I'm like, absolutely. She needs somebody to talk to as well. Now, I don't know if it's actually going to happen. Many times people will say things, and they'll be, I'd love to talk with you, and then it doesn't happen. But I'm like, okay. I just open myself up and make myself available. I don't know what the outcome's going to be. I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a relationship there. I just make myself available because I believe that God is always speaking, moving, and in him we have our being. And he's always at work. This came to my mind as I walked away from that interaction. It says in the scriptures, and the Lord God formed the man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. Now, when I read that passage, my brain just goes, poof, I just blow up. Like, what is going on? It just starts blowing up. And man became a living being from the breath of God. We have been breathed into existence, and this divine breath is in every human being. Do you ever stop long enough just to take that in? Just to think about that? Do you ever think that divine breath is in other people as well? In the Bible, the word breath and spirit are the same word. Now think about that. The word used for spirit is the word ruah. It almost sounds like breath, doesn't it? Ruah. The Spirit of God, the breath of God. In the Hebrew, that word ruah resonates in my spirit. Now, if the word for breath and spirit are the same in the Bible, how does that change the way you look at yourself, and how does that change the way you look at others? If the very life-giving breath of God and God's Spirit has been breathed into every human being, how does that change the way you look at others? Now, for me, it invites me to take a very deep look, not only at others, but at myself. And then I think of, like, David in the Psalms crying out to God, "Oh God, search me, know me, see me. Go in there and dissect and start pulling things out of me that I'm not aware of. Show me things that I need to let go of, things that are that I'm still clinging to that are not life-giving things. Anything in me, God, anything in me that needs to go, bring it up and show it to me." It's like, oh, that's so scary, but there's something so wonderful about that. Because when God begins to reveal things that are going on inside of us, the thing I love about breath is that he never takes it and shoves it back in our face. He never asks shame questions. Why did you do that? Why? Why did you do that? No, he invites and he reveals things to us. And he talks to us about, do you want to get well? Right? Which is a question that Jesus asked. Do you want to get well? Can't always assume that people want to get well, but it is a very inviting question. Do you want this? Do you want to get better? Do you want me to heal you? Because I want to heal you, but do you want that? As he reveals these things, and that's the question as we move through Lent and we move towards resurrection, we move towards life, is what are the things that God may be bringing up in me that I need to let go of? And then the question that a good friend of mine keeps reminding me of is what is it that's keeping me? What's keeping me from letting these things go? What's keeping me from looking at these things? Or what is keeping me from allowing God to come in and bring that healing? Why do I keep pushing back? What is it in me that's causing me to resist that or causing me to look away from that? Those are really, really good questions. What is keeping you from letting go of these things? You see, as the worship team comes back up now, I want to remind you of this. You, my friends, are a sacred creation of God. The divine breath is flowing through you, and it's flowing through the person next to you right now, and then it's flowing through the person next to them. That divine breath. You are on holy ground, my friends. There is a holiness to people all around us, and how you treat others actually matters. It matters. Because that breath and that spirit is in them as well. So how you treat Gene and how you treat Johnny matters. But are we stopping long enough to actually pay attention? Because the breath exists in us and it exists in them. That God is right here, right now, all the time. May you come to see that the ground in which you are standing is holy ground. And as you slow down, may you become aware that it is in Yod, He, Vav, He, that we live and we move and we have our very being. Grace and peace be with you all. Thank you.